Goodbye, Rachel.
Goodbye, Ryan.
You have become what you were destined to become while doing this podcast. I'm so proud of all the achievements you've done here. Goodbye, Rachel. Goodbye. Goodbye, Rachel. Thank you so much for what you've done here.
Goodbye, Ryan.
Thank you so much for saying goodbye. It really meant a lot to me. I guess we could do a Yum Yum Trek show to talk about an episode of Star Trek Discovery, but there aren't words to describe whatever one we were going to talk about. But I guess we've just got to trust the mystery to guide us along, because we just need it to happen. Don't sweat the details.
But this podcast has given me the best moments of my life.
Yeah. Yum yum! So we are Ryan and Rachel. We are going back and talking about Star Trek Discovery on the rewatch. If you have not watched any Star Trek Discovery, spoilers! We're going to spoil it all, including the third season. That was us just having a teary-eyed goodbye session. Rachel...
I think I might need a break.
You might need a break. Why are we called Yum Yum? What's the Yum Yum factor of the show?
The Yum Yum factor comes from a fantastic line of dialogue from the next episode that we will be covering, which is the season 2 finale of Star Trek Discovery by Commander Nahn.
Who was in this episode that we're going to be talking
about.
Yes. She said Yum Yum. So, what episode are we going back and revisiting this time round, Rachel? What's the number of the episode? And what's the name? Because I need you to help guide me along with your profound wisdom of data in front of you to tell us.
Season 2, episode 13, entitled Such Sweet Sorrow, comes in at a 7.2. The description... offered up is when the USS Discovery's crucial mission does not go according to plan, Burnham realizes what ultimately must be done. The crew prepares for battle of a lifetime as Leland's control ships get closer.
You know what that should say? The crew prepare for goodbyes. That's what it should say, because Such Sweet Sorrow, not Such Sweet Sorrow Part 1, because that would be...
The goodbyes are the battle of the lifetime.
I know that all of you will face your destinies with bravery and honor, even those moments to come that will test the strongest among us.
Rachel, what was your opinion of this episode when it initially came out? Because this is our whole thing, right? We're rewatching it. Let's give our perspective briefly on what it was like all those years ago when we didn't know the full picture, when we didn't know how the next episode after this was going to tie it all together. And what were your general feelings on it now?
Originally, I was mostly annoyed, a little bit confused, and a little bit angry, and that was basically my experience with this episode again.
I remember that when I watched it, I was tight, like physically tight, because not of, oh my god, how are they going to get this, but it was hitting every single worst aspect that I think of this show in a singular episode. Every single thing that grinds my gears about this show was in this episode when it initially aired. But what this episode is remembered to me as is the one where nothing happened the entire time other than everyone saying goodbye to each other over and over and over and over again, and or people coming on board the ship to say goodbye and then leaving, and or people messaging other people to say goodbye. It was that. That is what I remembered of this episode, more so than how it made me feel tight in all of these ways. I remember writing at the time as a status on Facebook or something that it was very bold of the writers this week not to even write an episode, because it was so lackluster in terms of what there should be. However, this time round watching it, I still feel that this episode is completely empty in terms of narrative force, but it is filled to the brim with details of setting things up. This feels as if it's putting all the pieces in place and it's trying to put this piece here and this piece there, and we've got to bring this piece from the short trek and put it here. It is a big episode, but it also is small at the same time. Now, just saying it's putting all the pieces on the board doesn't mean it was a good episode to me, because I still did not like this episode. But I cannot say with a whole heart that nothing happened in this episode in the way that I used to be able to say it. There were things that did happen, but it was mostly just moments and lines of dialogue and plans that will just benefit next episode. But in terms of this actual episode, no. There was nothing much to it in terms of a narrative force. There is no plot in this episode. The choices made are choices made to end the mystery for the next episode. For the next episode to be able to have the platform to stand on and say, "We did it! Trust the mystery, folks."
Trust the mystery.
We have to talk about one of the most important scenes in Star Trek history.
It's a defining moment, right along with Yum Yum.
It is something we mentioned in our very first episode. It is so bizarre. Rachel, what am I talking about? Could you set us up for what we are going to launch into?
Okay, so in this episode, the Discovery is accompanied by the Enterprise, and we get...
The Enterprise?
The Enterprise.
With the handles on the turbo lifts?
And... Yeah.
Whoa, I remember that.
And the uniforms.
Do they at least play the music from the original series to remind me of it?
Well, you know what, I think they might.
Oh, okay, cool. I'm there. Okay. We're with the Enterprise.
Yes, we're with the Enterprise. And Discovery is evacuating.
Yeah, because they're going to self-destruct.
They are going to remote self-destruct to try and destroy the data.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody gets on the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a few different conversations. And then Georgiou comes in. And her response is...
As soon as the turbo lift opens up and she walks onto the bridge, her response is, "Orange? Really? And it's delivered like that, by the way.
Orange? Really?
It's such a small moment that we're focusing on. But that Star Trek Discovery is...
It was off!
Isn't that Star Trek Discovery? It has these little moments, and when you step back... You forget that they happen because there's so many random little moments like that that it becomes a blur, all of that. And you just step back away from the episode and it's as if you've been assaulted by all those little nicks and those little cuts and those little details.
Like, there's so many things, and I've said it so many fucking times. If you don't think about it...
It's fine.
It's fine.
Because we used to talk about our nitpicks, and we had to stop doing that, because if we just did it, the whole episode of our discussion would just be nothing but the nitpicks. This moment here, why it's so important is, it makes no sense.
No.
It makes no sense until you do...
The bridge is very clearly red.
His uniform is clearly yellow. Their uniforms are clearly red and blue.
There is no orange in that frame. There's no orange to be seen on the bridge, because when we originally watched the episode, we rewound it and we were like, what fucking orange is she talking about?
And we debated between the two of us what she thought orange was
only settled after you did additional research.
Before we get into the additional research that I had to do to understand a joke in the episode, we debated between the two of us for quite some time. It wasn't as if, oh, I did the additional research after we watched the episode initially.
No.
I had to wait a couple of weeks to find out what the fuck that was. But we argued between the two of us what she thought was orange. Because she walks onto the ship. There's everything. There's big red handrails, big red doorways, like, and him in his bright yellow outfit.
Is her light sensitivity also crossing over into differences in color appearance? Because it's not her being like colorblind.
No, but that doesn't even make sense.
That wouldn't make sense with her going from red to orange, and also that they haven't mentioned that before.
Well, that's the important thing right there. What you just did there. That is how Star Trek Discovery demands the audience to operate on. Oh, what was that? I don't know. Oh, logic. It must be this. You, the audience, are demanded to
legwork.
Do the legwork that they do not put in themselves. And that can be very rewarding when watching some pieces of media, right? Where they don't tell you outright what this is and lets you fill in the blanks. But moments like this, it is just so crazy that audience members who love this show have to try and justify what is a nonsense moment. Like, it's completely nonsense. It makes no sense. They have to justify it with, oh, well, her eyes must be different detecting colors because of her eyes are different because she's from the Mirror Universe. Yet these are the same people who, when confronted with, well, at no point in season 2 does she have a sensitivity to light, will say, oh, well, she must have got her eyes fixed. Yet, even in Star Trek Discovery, they say you can't get your eyes fixed, you have to get them removed completely and replaced with basically cybernetics like Geordi LaForge. So that's the level of incoherent this moment is, and why do we focus on it so much? Because, like we said, why is it there? It's a joke. So what is the actual answer? Because you had that thought process. You also thought it was his uniform. I said, no, it must be the handrails because red and orange. But, like, here's the actual answer. And it's so ludicrous that I have to preface this with, who's this show for, when I give you the answer? So who's this show for? Is it for people who know all the ins and outs of the Star Trek lore and everything about Star Trek? Or is it for people who know nothing about Star Trek? Or is it for people in between? Because here is what the answer is for those who don't know. According to articles and people who did actually bother to want to know the answer, the people behind the scenes were trying to make a little wink and nod and Easter egg reference to the fact that in the original 1960s television show from over 50 years ago, that on the Enterprise, the red on the doorways and the handles and safety rails and all that appeared slightly orange-ish because of the type of film that they used to do it on, the type of lens, and or the post-production color correction of the times would make certain colors do that, would make certain yellows slightly greenish, certain oranges slightly, you know, less orange, or red slightly orange. And that's what it was a reference to. And apparently, that they got the original red that they actually painted on the handrails, the actual red. But the difference is, they didn't do any of the stuff to make the red appear orange. They may have got the exact shade of red that was used on the Enterprise back in the 60s, but they didn't do whatever film they used or the lens or the color correction to make it appear slightly orange. So when Giorgio walks on the bridge and makes this reference to such a minute Easter egg or specific detail in the Star Trek lore that a person like me who has watched the original series 10 times didn't even realize that that was a reference, because when I watch the original series, I just go, oh yeah, that's orange, or yeah, that's red. Oh, I don't even fucking think about it, because it doesn't matter. But this scene walks in, and she makes a reference, a joke, to a piece of set design from the 60s, and how, again, who's this show for? A piece of set design from the 1960s that, due to the filming and or post-production, appears orangish instead of red. Why is this here? Because reference. But they didn't even follow through being able to make the reference make fucking sense. So people like Rachel, people like people online, critics, have to try and justify this nonsense moment because we are used to, in television shows of this caliber, everything making sense and being coherent and not being nonsensical. But the issue is, due to them not being able to follow through on being able to make that red appear slightly orangish, it does make no sense. And I say to you, why is it there? Why couldn't they cut that? Because it adds nothing. It is just Giorgio walking on and being snarky. And this isn't as if they're not afraid to do ADR over Giorgio to do a different lines. We've seen that fucking many times during the show already. We bring this up because this episode is filled with moments like that, as is the whole season. It's filled with random nonsense moments in which they put so much emphasis on the wrong things. Like, who gives a shit about the red being slightly orange in the original show? You know what I would have liked? Knowing Tilly in this whole season. I feel like I didn't know who she was for most of the season. Let Paul have some characterization other than just frumping his eyebrows. But instead, we've got to waste our time on this little reference joke. We've got to waste our time on Captain Pike giving a 6-minute, 7-minute monologue and demanding that he goes through each crew member one by one, thanking them for the service that they've done, instead of actually letting the characters act out the things he's thanking them for.
You are exceptional officers, exceptional individuals, every single one of you. Lieutenant Detmer and Owoshiken, I wouldn't be here if you hadn't saved my life on the way to that asteroid. Lieutenant Nilsen, you've stepped up for Arium in a way that honors her. Lieutenants Bryce and Reese, you're calm under pressure. And Commander Saru, I'm gonna miss the hell out of you.
For me, to a degree, the goodbyes take second place to the amount of band-aids and spackle that they try and fill plot holes and smooth things over.
And details.
Yeah, it's just like it. Everything is thrown in and everything is so in your face. I was finding the score just so awful in this.
Yeah, this episode is held up by primarily three things. The paving over the mystery with just hand waving and lamp shading. Like you said, there's so many moments where people are like, wait a moment, what does this mean? And they say, oh, don't sweat the details, or they say, trust the mystery, or, oh, there are four signals, aren't there supposed
to
be seven?
We'll deal with that later.
We'll deal with it later, or, wait, aren't there supposed to be four signals? Oh, what, we're just going to expect a signal to arrive because we need it to? There are so many moments like that, or, you can judge my character flaws later, but I'll still act out my enormous character flaws, or, you have a martyr complex, so what? That's one. The other is the goodbyes. And the other one that this episode is held up by, very much so, that I find very peculiar, and I would love to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember Runaway? The short trek? You fucking better remember it, because if you don't, this episode makes no sense. Can we talk about how when we watched this originally,
we
didn't know short treks existed. They didn't advertise it here. So, is that the fault of us, the viewer, for not knowing and watching that important piece of tome? Or is that the fault of the storytelling?
It's the show.
When we did Short Treks, I said I do not abide by supplemental material being important to the main text. I should not have to read a bunch of comic books to understand Southland Tales the movie. I should not have to watch a bunch of shorts on the BBC site to understand the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who, right? I should be able to fucking watch the thing itself, the actual thing, and be able to make sense of it. But when we watch this, I did not know there were short treks, and so what does this mean? I just said, it makes no sense. Oh, well, that's in line with Discovery. Like, oh, of course Tilly just has a deus ex machina friend who knows her in and out, and she can help solve the situation. Of course she does. I took it at face value. I didn't even get angry at it the first time. I just saw it and said, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yep, and not as doing in that this makes... now, we're moving on.
And not as, oh yeah, that makes sense in context of, well, A plus B equals C. It was, oh, that makes sense in terms of this is how this show writes things. It just needs to, as they say, we just need it to happen that way.
We
trust
understand the discovery alphabet now. Is yeah. that what you say?
And I've cracked the code of the sphere data.
We tried to delete the data. It wouldn't let us.
If the data has merged with Discovery, that would explain its ability to use Discovery's resources to ensure its survival.
I don't want to be angry. I don't want to be negative. I don't want to be cruel and mean and just say there's no value to anything in episodes of Star Trek Discovery, because I think that there is work being put in, but it is incomprehensible. And they put the emphasis in the wrong places. But can we try and put emphasis on what worked or any positives within this episode itself? Because it is so easy when you're critiquing something just to spend the whole time railroading it and saying this doesn't work and this doesn't work and it's funny and this is bad and this is bad. But even in an episode like this, is there something that worked or was good or you enjoyed or you could say is a positive, whether you're grading on a curve or not?
There are a few things, but they do come with buts.
Of course they do.
A lot of the time. So I do enjoy the number of shots that we get that really show the scale of the ships and their connections. But the CGI looks shit a lot of the time.
Yeah, in this one, I don't know what happened. I guess I gotta save it for the next episode's budget.
But
this
I do appreciate that we get the sense of scale and closeness of the ships in space.
Mm-hmm.
You wanna?
Positives. I actually didn't mind the scene with Jet Reno. Just sacrifice, like being, I'll do this with the time crystal. I'll do it. I appreciated that someone in the fucking room just said, I'll rip the Band-Aid off on this one, guys. That felt like a Star Trek moment. It felt accurate to her character to do that. I have no buts for that, except for one little thing. And this will be something I want to mention more down the road of the episode of our discussion, but I think that scene would have worked much better if we didn't have Michael have already touched that time crystal at the start of the episode, because we already get a sense of what the thing is, and we already knew from Pike, but to me, in the episode, it felt like a double up, and I felt like moment like that for Jet Reno would have hit harder. Yeah, they reuse the stuff, but it would have hit harder.
Yes, I completely agree.
If the foreshadowing and visions of the dark future were from someone who willingly sacrificed their mind, basically, to save the ship, instead of Michael just wanting to touch it.
Yeah.
But I thought that was a genuinely good moment for Jet Reno, a character that I both wish was and wasn't in the show more. It was a good moment for her, and I have no complaints about Tikkun Tara in that scene. It was a decent choice. I thought it worked.
I didn't mind the performance of Poe.
Okay.
I get what she's going for, and I feel like it makes sense with that character. It's very over the top. And I still like her design as well.
Yeah.
You can just say that you disagree.
I disagree. Oh, okay. My thing is, and this is only brief, but she's just Tilly. And I know that they're supposed to be similar, but like, the Star Trek Discovery thinks a very specific thing about young people, and they think that they're all just Tilly. Just want to say. That's something I've been noticing in season 3. A lot of the young characters are all the same as Tilly. Like, loud, blathering, yeah, girl, yes, queen, and blah, 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 blah.
I think it is.
I don't know.
I think it's just because she got to slightly insult Michael.
Oh, I like the bit where, for no apparent, when I say like, I mean, I both hate and love this moment, actually, where, for some reason, time management was so great in this episode, we had to stop for them to mention that Michael's short.
Yeah.
I don't even know why that was a thing that needed to be mentioned. It was very odd, but it was funny. Because it was nice to see a character come in and take Michael down a peg for no reason.
Just something.
Something. Another moment I actually did like with in the episode was, and I wish that this was more expanded upon in the episode, is Giorgio almost served a purpose in this one in terms of they needed this certain thing, and she offered up her Terran solution of wanting to supernova the sun to get the results that they wanted. And that reminded me of DS9, of course. But I wish that that was, instead of them just palming it off like, nah, we're not going to do that, I wish there was a little bit more weight in terms of that conversation playing out. But I didn't mind the fact that they at least had her chip in an opinion that makes sense for her character and would actually make sense for the situation. I'm not saying that they should go with that suggestion, but I understand at least someone had to say it.
They listened to her last season.
Yeah, it made a little bit more sense. Any other things?
I liked Anson Mount's sexy little wink.
That's it. That's all the positives we have. We got to talk about the Enterprise, the bridge. They showed it. We all knew that they were going to, but they played it off like they were never going to. I hate it, but it's what I expected of them to do.
Yeah,
it's slightly more bright, slightly more silver, and it has red handrails. It is...
He doesn't have to hold on to the handrails the whole time.
It is generic.
He just has to, like... It's kind of like pressing the elevator button instead of having to hold on to it.
Oh, you mean the handles in the turbo lift? Yeah, well, that's the original series reference. It was fine. I didn't love it. If this was its own show, would that bridge be iconic in any fashion? No. It's very cluttered. It's very weirdly lit. The red kind of doesn't suit the environment around it, if anything. But... they did it, and there it is. Number one was there. Okay. I don't like. It's the Enterprise. It's a very cheap thing to manipulate the audience with, right? Like, isn't it, Rachel?
Yeah.
The Enterprise holds a lot of weight in terms of buying favor with your audience and losing it as well. It lost a lot of favor for people, and it gained a lot for others. For me, it is exactly what I expected them to do when refitting it and redoing it. There's no nuance or surprise or anything. It is exactly it. It is just the Discovery set, but a little bit smaller and some red on it.
Orange. Really? Yeah.
Poe.
Poe.
We'll mention the short treks. I got a question for you that I really want you to think about.
Yep.
Did we need her in this episode? Even if you knew the short track, just did we need her here?
She's required. Like, we need her for her piece of technology.
Right.
That's it.
So you're saying she's only required because she has a piece of tech?
Yes.
Right.
She's not required for any thematic purpose or any particular character growth. Like, they have a line where she's just like, well, I'm the queen that I am now and I'm so great. And Tilly, you'll be great one day when you become captain. And it felt vacuous the first time that we watched it. But now having seen Tilly superiorly unqualified take the comms and how much everything fucks up in the third season when she's left in charge. Like, she got fucked over, but also, like, that's what they decided to do with her.
I ask this because you're right. She doesn't serve anything character-wise or thematically or anything. She's just there,
She just disappears from the episode as well.
That's for next episode, for her to bring in little fighters and shoot around and look up and say goodbye, Tilly. What is the difference between having her and just having the computer do it off-screen?
Nothing.
And there you go. Why can't we further explore and further demonstrate the values, intelligence, and skill set of our actual crew of characters? Why do we need to bring in a random person who, by all intents and purposes, is just a device in the episode. They're not a character. You don't need them to be. They are just basically a plug-in. Why do we need to do that instead of giving Stamets, Jet Reno, and Tilly moments to actually do it on their own?
We need to make the short tracks matter a bit.
Why?
So that people keep paying for CBS All Access?
Yeah. I just don't understand why we even needed her, because I was looking at the episode going, I don't know who any of these characters are. And we've been talking about that throughout the show, right? Why do you think we've lost touch with who any of our central crew of characters are, except for perhaps Saru? We kind of know who he is because they do tell us that he has evolved and changed, and we've seen him get angry.
Yeah, but and the degree that we know Pike is a lot of stuff from the original series.
Yeah, and he emulates the Kirk
aura,
and we are familiar with that because we've seen Star Trek. But why have... What has happened to when we get into an episode like this where we just don't know any of these people? It feels like we don't know them, yet we've spent two seasons with them.
Because all they do is feel.
Doesn't that mean we should know who they are even more so? Because I have feelings and I can empathize with feelings.
Yeah.
But I love feeling of feelings.
Yeah, but you don't learn who a person is as well just seeing how they feel rather than seeing what they do.
Right. You're wanting more action instead of feeling.
We've said it a bunch of times. Show, don't tell.
Yeah, I think a part of it is all of that. And I think it's Poe in this episode is a specific example that you could apply to the whole show with these characters. They have a random device. I can't even say she's a character in the episode. She's a random device that comes in and solves the situation and or furthers the situation instead of our characters doing it themselves. Paul Stamets wants to leave from the beginning of the show, and he still wants to leave at the end of the show. He has no development. He doesn't...
But he stays.
But he stays... But he wants to leave in season three still.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the ebbs and flows? Where's the ups and downs? Where's the depths? He is at one note. And a part of it is, we just don't have time. We've got to move on to the next thing. And I just don't know who any of these people are.
Feel it. Don't think it. Feel it.
Oh, yeah. Feel the things. And not as if feelings are unimportant in your narrative. They are very important, but at the same time,
they should be paired with something.
They're a tool.
Feelings on their own do not create the depth that we are looking for in this show.
Feelings on their own lack weight.
Yes.
You need more than just feelings. You need details. You need characterization. You need something for the weight of the feelings to attach themselves to. But at the end of the day, this episode is an almost an hour long of people saying goodbye, people tearfully crying about something, and or hand waving off explanations for why the mystery hasn't been fulfilling for the season. That's what this episode is at the end of the day, and it is supremely disappointing.
I think the audience has to have a satisfying experience of the season. I think they have to feel it's come full circle and that they've had an arc.
The other thing that I really did not enjoy, and it genuinely hurt my eyes to look at, was the number of overlay scene transitions that they did. Like, the main two examples that I'm thinking of, because I think that there are more than this, and are scenes that use this editing technique, are the two
Future Echoes,
and then when they're each recording the messages.
Boy, oh boy.
And I understand the purpose of the overlays in both of those situations, because in the Future Echoes, where we're seeing like how time is overlapping and the person who's seeing the Echo and the Echo itself and how those are connected and they slip in and out.
Yeah.
Because, like, time is relative and the connection that that person has to that potential future moment is not strong. It's flimsy at that stage because there's still potential for change.
It's overproduced.
Yes, that's the short way of putting it.
Because they do... to me, it reminded me of yesterday's Enterprise when it snapped into the dark, gritty verse, right? And you had like that flicker and then bam, it's like that. But that show had a minimal budget in comparison to this one. It was the 90s or late 80s and they did it in a far more simple bang, here you go. This one has a bigger budget, so it gets to show off and be more fanciful. Over-designed, over-produced, overdone. The music is too much. The costumes can be too much. The acting can be too much. The writing, this, the pacing, the special effects, overlays. The cinematography was lots of spinning the camera again because they can't trust in their own scenes enough. They need to spin the camera to make it feel like there's something, again, feel like there's something important going on instead of actually having something important going on.
Part of the core thing that we dislike about Discovery is how both of us find that there are oodles and oodles of vacuous, empty detail, and there's no substance underneath, which is why when you look at it, well, there's lots of things that happen in this episode, but does any of it matter? Can we explain why any of it happens other than this needs to happen because that happened?
Because this domino piece needs to make this one fall over here and it all to line up because we reverse engineered the show. We wanted to get to this point, so we made this line up before it. Even if it doesn't feel satisfying or feel true to the characters or the story.
We cannot say that Poe appears because she has hit a crisis on her planet, or that Tilly needs a reminder that she's capable, or that everybody needs to know about this technology. Because also, we need to acknowledge in this episode she doesn't give them the details of her re-crystallization.
No, she just does it herself.
But they then have all like the details of the cage that she made, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Because she can't hide that because like it's a physical object that's there now.
That's fine.
And she's like, I'll modify my incubator.
Yeah, I guess so.
They never mention this incubator again. They never try and adapt
it. They never mention Serana's knife again either. But in this episode, Doug Jones had to halt the fucking pace so that he can bang on about his sister's knife that's really important, because she would be disappointed if he left it behind. Yet it's so important, we never hear of it again. Or it's never used. I thought in that moment...
But we get to see lots of plants again.
I thought in that moment...
The plants are more important.
I thought in that moment when he was talking about the Serana's knife, I was like, oh, that's right. And then this didn't happen. This doesn't happen. I said, oh, that's right. He must use that knife to incapacitate someone in the next episode.
I did the same thing. I was like, oh.
But then I remembered, oh, wait, no, next episode, he just stands on the bridge the whole time being purposeless.
You know, there's a transition I went through in season two where I broke free from that. So now... that's been liberating, and he now can be in a position of leadership confidently. That changes everything.
Time management has been a thing that we have been very, very critical of this particular season. All of our criticisms, all of our points of view that we've mentioned in every single episode leading up to this is all here. This episode is the one where it's actually the most important, because this episode is the calm before the storm and the ticking down of the clock before the ship hits the fan.
And cleaning house.
And they manage the time so fucking poorly. What should be important is these things over here, but they go the other direction. We don't need the future echoes from Michael in this episode. I don't think it's needed.
I don't think it was needed. It does not do anything other than further the mystery of what's going to happen next episode. In this episode, did it actually serve anything? No, we didn't need it.
I genuinely forgot that they don't do the undetonated torpedo until
next episode. Next episode. No, next episode is when all the fights happen.
Because, like, I was like... Oh, they're mentioning it a lot, so I guess something has to happen this episode. But I was also like, but the battle is next episode, so it's not going to be this episode.
You don't need it. You don't.
But they're
you don't,
telling me over and over again.
It's important. And again, you don't need that. Cut that. That doesn't need to be in this episode. We already know the stakes are high. We already know Leland's going to come in with an armada and hurt our characters and things are at stake. The time pressure of figuring out Poe's technology and figuring out that should have been the more sensitive issue rather than, oh no, we've got to retrofit these things in 5 minutes.
Oh, but Michael's Ryan, having future vision. We have to watch them die.
We have to watch them die. Michael's having future visions of control, joyfully killing everyone, even though he doesn't have emotions, because that's the whole point, right? He's trying to gain consciousness, even though he clearly has it, but either way. Management of time, saying goodbye over and over and over again, to the point in which there's a solid 8 minute chunk of goodbyes, and then that is followed up with a goodbye montage, and then that is capped off with a goodbye again. What the fuck is that? You don't need it. You can simplify that, shorten that down. We get the sentiment. We get the sentiment that this is a big deal. There's just so much wasted time of, oh, we've got to go to Poe's planet to get this MacGuffin. And then as we sit here getting this MacGuffin, Sarek and Amanda are going to go show up so that they can be in a scene that they could have just served as, like, do we need that? Amanda and Sarek, I just want to say, Amanda and Sarek show up. That is the most egregious thing, because don't even get me started about how they managed to get there in time from Vulcan.
How they found them?
How they found them, how they managed to travel there before Leland could get there, and
Katra.
Because Katra...
Katra led him.
To them. But don't even get me started on that. But from a purpose of time management and from a script perspective, why did you bother having Amanda and Sarek start the episode knowing something's wrong, and then have them travel to the Discovery ship to be in a singular scene in which the whole entire scene is just saying goodbye, and we're very proud of you, and Sarek asking...
It gives us a mini cliffhanger before the ad break.
There is no cliffhanger. They just leave.
No. Like, they appear, and then it cuts to ad break, I'm pretty
right.
sure.
Right. It doesn't matter.
And then they return, and then they leave before the next ad break
It's
starts.
A waste of time. Sure, that stuff that they say may or may not be important, but is it important in the pace of this episode? No, it slows it down, it detracts, it goes away.
Sarek apologizes for being a bad dad.
And he promises that he will continue being a bad father to Spock.
Because that's what Spock asked for.
Because that's what he asked for, because a father should always abide by the nonsense of their children and not be the better person and actually try to form relationships, because that's logical.
Promise me that you'll take care of Spock.
I will always be here for our son. Always. Even as I keep my distance, as he has asked.
We have talked many times about what control is and what control wants.
Wanting
and the show
consciousness.
The show keeps saying it wants the Sphere Data with all of its knowledge and all of its information to become fully conscious. Yet the show keeps demonstrating that it has wants, needs, desires, it has a personality, and has...
meets the criteria for consciousness and sentience already by most sci-fi standards at this stage.
I think after our discussion last week, and actually editing that episode and rewatching the clips, and now having watched this episode, I think I know where the issue lies. I think that the writers of this show are confusing wanting it wants consciousness with it wants all the information, all the intelligence, because it is an intelligence program, and an intelligence program wants to know all the information and intelligence, because what it wants is all the data to be incredibly smart. Do you see what I'm saying? It wants intelligence.
Brian.
It doesn't want to become more conscious, because it is. It is as if I'm a dumb person, and I really wish that I was intelligent, and I want you to fill my brain with information to make me smart. That's what it wants. It doesn't want consciousness.
Brian,
it wants intelligence.
I just fixed it in my brain.
Yeah, go on.
It's the brains from Futurama that are trying to gather all of the data in the entire universe, and then they want to blow up the universe so no more data can be created.
It wants not to become fully conscious, because it is, by my standards at least. I think that they confuse that with it wants to become the most intelligent being.
Yeah.
And that's how I think they heard it wants to become the most intelligent being, and instead of focusing on it wants to become the most intelligent, they thought, oh, it wants to become the most being. And being means alive or conscious. And that's what they're focusing on. That's what we've been getting tripped up on. And I think that's what it is. And the fact that they don't know that or can confuse the two aspects and yet make a whole big song and dance about what the differences are says a lot.
I don't think that it's even really that. I think that they went, it's on the journey to become the most intelligent.
Mm.
But that doesn't sound good. So what do AIs want? Evil AIs want
to destroy
sentience.
Everyone. Sentience.
So that's the journey, but that's not what it's about. So it's labeled with something that it's not.
If they
make it easier in terms of shorthand, that or they didn't even think about it.
The way that they set it up initially, and the way that it makes sense to me, and yet this isn't what they actually followed through with, is it would make sense to me if this intelligence program wants the data to garner all of the information, right? And that it itself wants the data because it wants to be more intelligent. But we know from the future events, as does our crew, that it gaining intelligence eventually makes it become conscious and makes it want to destroy all life. But instead, it's not that. It's already met the criteria of self-awareness and wanting and desiring things and having a personality.
It
just wants more, more, more. It doesn't...
Even if it was more like it wants its own body and its own intelligence and its own soul.
Mm.
Because it's then the stepping stones from like being the program to infecting Arium to taking over Leland's body and doing the holograms before they get to Leland. Then all of that would be progression towards the goal of achieving own independence and being a physical body with sentience.
I know what we've done wrong here.
What?
And we always keep not doing this.
Thinking?
We think of it in a different way. So you mentioned before that this show operates on emotion a lot. And this is a way that it also operates on a variant of emotion. And of course, this has been a running thread throughout the entire season. We think of this as a sci-fi concept. We think of this as a rogue AI that wants all the intelligence and becomes Skynet and
are
it destroys
not?
All life. We are supposed to think of this as a spiritual concept with a sci-fi aesthetic. Because it wants to become conscious, and once it does, its fate will be to destroy all organic life.
That sounds like an excuse to be vague.
Well, it can be if we don't understand what their views on faith is. And we don't have a strong understanding of their views on faith. But do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They say faith a lot in this show.
No, like,
but
I've,
that is
I've
what we are up. Getting. We are getting tripped up on. We expect Star Trek to be sci-fi, detailed, orientated. But instead, it is faith, spirituality orientated with sci-fi trappings and aesthetic. So we keep getting tripped up on, well, this intelligence data, it would want this. And we're thinking in terms of, in a sci-fi narrative, in sci-fi tropes and cliches and this, these details would be this way.
Yeah.
But in a more spiritual faith way, sure, it wants the sphere data so it can become intelligent. And, you know, we gotta work that out. And another thing we gotta mention is the actual data itself. I keep thinking of that as a sci-fi concept, but they think of it as a spiritual concept because no one worries the fuck out that this Data becomes alive, wants to protect itself, and takes over their ship. In a Star Trek show, that would be a moral discussion about the ethics of artificial life and what does that mean. In this, it is, wow, it just really wants to help us. It believes in itself and us, and we've got to help it to restore the balance of everything in the universe. It's that type of thing. Instead of, we would expect, oh, the Data has become self-aware and alive in its own right, and in a show in which the antagonist is a piece of code that has become self-aware and alive in its own right and wants things, you would expect that there would be tension or some form of conflict with the fact that there's another program of code that has become alive and self-aware and has taken over their ship, and they should actually explore its intentions. But instead it is, this is God, and that one's the devil. Accept it.
Yeah. And it's going back to well-trodden ground, but I think that that does make sense, and it makes me feel a little bit better, because the other episode I got really upset because I kept on thinking, and the episode was making me feel like I was thinking about everything wrong.
Yeah. But why is that a bad thing to have it be more spiritual and faith-based, detail-orientated than science, sci-fi? Even though, yes, we are in a Star Trek show and we want that, but why is that inherently a flawed way of telling this story? Because it is inherently flawed to us, the way that they've presented it. Why is that the case? Is it because we aren't particularly spiritual, faithful people? You are, more so than I. You've come from a background in which you've experienced faith and spirituality than I. How come this doesn't work for you? And in general, shouldn't it be able to translate to people who aren't spiritual in their own right anyway? Because I've enjoyed many spiritual stories and films, and I'm not a particularly spiritual person, but it communicates the notion across effectively. But how come this doesn't? Why doesn't this work?
My first thought, and I'll go with this guess. The show expects and assumes that we have blind faith in it itself.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's what they think faith is blind faith. Star Trek Discovery operates on blind faith in terms of its own writing. And what does that even say or mean? Like, what does that say about spirituality? Nothing. It says, just trust us. The mystery will work out.
Just the mystery box, you know?
We haven't talked about him much during this season. Oddly enough, we had a lot more to say about him in season one. And
who am I forgetting?
Ash Tyler.
Oh, that's because I want to forget him, because I think that he's awful.
I want to stop that mentality straight off the bat in this discussion, because that's obvious. We don't like Ash Tyler.
Oh, yeah.
But why did the show stop liking Ash Tyler? Because on this rewatch, it's so crystal clear to me that they don't know, like, they don't like him as a show. Because think back to all the stuff we had to say about him in season one, when they had the potential and they wanted to do stuff with him, and think of how little we've said about him in season two. It's as if they, and how they palm him off at the end of this journey, and how him and Michael don't even have a relationship in this season.
No.
I forgot that. I thought, oh yeah, I remember they had a lot of relationship drama, but really, it is just this scene in this singular episode.
Yeah, it's mainly this one, and I think it has to do with his role within the plot. So in season one, he was a very central figure, and he was part of a big mystery.
And he was a part of the theme of the Klingon War.
Yeah. And in this one, he's less important to the central plot, and he's more there to push Michael in certain directions and to...
What directions?
Give certain pieces of information.
What directions does he push Michael in this season?
Doesn't he
What does he do? What does he do?
Well, he gives them insight into Section 31.
Okay, there you go. My question to you is, do we need him when we already have Giorgio? Well, everything he has served as a Section 31 officer in this season, could you have not written it that Giorgio is that? Giorgio is the one that gets locked up for being the suspicious one sending feedback to control in that episode.
Yeah.
Isn't Giorgio the one who's pushing Michael to do these certain things from the Section 31 perspective as well as her own agenda? Why is Ash Tyler in this season if the show itself does not care for him? Because we have seen the show drop characters and ideas if they stop caring for them. Why is he here? Why is he stuck around?
Because Michael needs to make out with somebody, I guess.
Why?
Because that's an emotional moment and we're getting all of these friendship moments, so we need a romantic moment.
I might be bold, and this might be not my purview to say, but isn't that line of thought, in a way, kind of degrading and sexist? Because isn't it just, she's the woman, so she needs the romantic thing to pull her through in a moment?
Oh, yeah.
If she was a guy, would they have bothered to pull over for that? Perhaps. Mm. And even then, it's still eye-roll-inducing, because we don't... They haven't had a relationship this season.
Nope.
He hasn't had anything this season. Why? Time management. Cut him out of this season. Leave him at the Point of Light episode. Leave him there. No, don't need him.
Just leave him on Kronos.
I'll tell you why he's here.
Why?
We need the Klingons to show up at the end.
Yes.
And that's the only reason he's here. The only fucking reason he stuck around for this whole season was so that a bunch of Klingons can show up and shoot a bunch of ships at the end.
Yeah.
The
I forgot how much they love reverse engineering. I'm sorry. How could I ever forget?
I never liked Ash Tyler. You never did either. But don't you feel kind of sad when watching Ash Tyler get nothing to do? Because there have been many characters in shows that we don't like that can actually turn around because they give them something.
Yeah, he's just done dirty.
I feel as if they disrespected him as an actor and disrespected his character and disrespected any audience member that had investment in Ash Tyler. I never did. But I feel it is disgusting.
I was quite upset that and sad that you don't see that kind of... the Voke we saw in episode 4. You never see that sweet, loving, brilliant plan, strategic planning, samurai calm style Voke that plans that whole thing in episode 4.
And, hungry,
and who's in power, who's very much in charge. So that progression, I always found a bit strange, but you know, I didn't write the show, so.
Talking about why is he here, it's time for the Hudar. Hugh, he's here. Tell me what he did in the episode.
He was in one shot, but didn't have dialogue. That was the first one when
he was Michael, sad in the shot too.
Michael
by the way.
Was doing her opening narration, I think.
You know what? Do you remember what he was sad about in the scene?
No.
Okay, it's the evacuation scene.
Yeah.
He's in sick bay, mm-hmm. and he's sadly stroking pieces of equipment to let us know that he's sad that his doctoring on this ship is coming to a close.
Fucking hell.
That's what that visually communicates.
Yeah.
Now, remember how this show has operated showing us Hugh actively being a doctor? They don't show it at all, really. And if they do, it doesn't give us any insight into even if he likes the profession.
They told us why he became a doctor.
Oh, there you go. The scar. That's right. Okay. The scar story. Yeah. Of course. How could I forget? Yeah, he's in that scene.
And then he's in at least two others saying goodbye to people, but the main one is when he's saying like farewell to Stamets.
Is that what you think that is?
Well, no, I think It's very strange because the text, I feel, is saying one thing and then the subtext is saying another, but not in a way where it feels deliberate.
See, I felt that that scene was actually the strongest scene in the episode because it was multi-layered and it felt like it was multi-layered by design. Characters were saying one thing and what they weren't saying is what they wanted to say.
Here is what I think. I think both of them went in hoping that the other one was going to bend the knee and say, I'm sorry.
Let's get back together. But neither did. Because we needed last to the end season.
Yep. So neither did. So they said, because Stamets was in the position where he was waiting for Hugh, and Hugh didn't want to jump in. He wanted to listen to Stamets.
As he always does.
Yeah.
He smiled and nod.
Yes, smile and nod.
Oh, man, so it took me back to season one all over again.
So then Stamets just says, okay, well, I'm just going to fuck off once we're done with this shit. And then Hugh is just like, okay, well, I'm gonna fuck off to the Enterprise. And then he's in at least one other, but is he in the group shot when everybody's like, we're staying with you, Burnham? Because we were far more concerned that like Ash and Spock were in that array of people.
Doesn't that answer your question? You were far more concerned with our other actual characters than Hugh. If you don't remember if Hugh was there, he may have been. I don't know. Don't care.
Usually his white uniform sticks out enough that I notice him.
That scene with him and Paul. You talked about what happened in it. But this is a scene about feelings. And that whole entire story is about feeling things. What did it make you feel?
Angry. Because I just kept on thinking, you don't have time for this. You don't have time for this. You are making such a thing about not having enough time to do all of these things. And then it's just slow until they get emotionally tired and they're like, okay, well, we have to end this conversation here. I need to go.
I got to ask, here and now, we may not get to do it in the final episode, but what's Hugh's problem?
I would guess that he doesn't know if Stamets will forgive him.
Why should Stamets forgive him?
Because they love each other.
Remember when this story was apparently about him having a sci-fi existential crisis about being a new, entirely different person? And see how it's boiled down to just what you said. That's what they boiled that down to. Instead of exploring themes and philosophy and existentialism,
it's
about faith. But in their relationship, it is just about love. They have the relationship that spans across life and death. Yet we never see it. And when we do, it's them actively fighting against one another at this point. And it's embarrassing. I noted down, though, this is our Hugh-Dar scene, right? This is the Hugh culmination scene. And you said it. He smiled and nodded during the whole entire scene. He never got to communicate across what he felt. Because every single time he's tried to communicate across what he's felt to Paul, Paul takes over and makes it all about him. Makes it all about him. And I really thought that upon the rewatch, I would appreciate that the journey was Hugh finally stops Paul and gets to speak his mind and communicate across these very hard to understand feelings to Paul, and Paul would understand them and be confronted. But instead, the whole season, every single time Hugh has tried to say something, Paul will cut him off or Hugh will cut himself off and leave the scenario. And we've been building up for three whole episodes now that Hugh wants to talk to Paul. He wants to talk to him, but he hasn't had the time. So here's the moment. And what does he do? He listens instead of talking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind the idea of Hugh being this empathic person who does the listening, but the whole entire season has been building up to, no, Hugh should stand up and make his voice heard.
This is the lesson that he needs to learn, and then he doesn't learn it.
But instead,
he just falls back onto his fucking normal old shit of just smiling and nodding and just interjecting with little statements that furthers Paul's ramblings about his own feelings. Wasn't this Hugh's story? Because this scene makes it, it's about Stamets. It's Stamets' story. It's about Stamets' feelings. You could say, well, the subtext is it's actually about Hugh. Fucking let Hugh speak and communicate and actually have his story and grab it by the horns. Instead, we're back to season one, Hugh, where he just lets Paul do talking. He smiles and nods, and he's just an extension of Paul. And I thought we moved beyond that.
I felt terrible, except for the fact that I thought it was really good storytelling, mm-hmm. and I knew where the story was going, and I knew that that was a necessary part of where we're about to go. So it was immediate pain for really great payoff later, I promise.
What would you rate Such Sweet Sorrow?
Yum.
A yum? Not yum yum. Good?
No.
Wow. I'm shocked, Rachel. I'm shocked because you like the actor playing Poe.
I didn't hate her, is what I meant. Yeah. I was stretching.
Yeah, you stretch. I give it a yum. It's everything wrong with Star Trek Discovery in a nutshell. It wasn't satisfying. The threat was completely useless and wasted, and there was no threats.
I'm very happy that I will likely never have to watch this again.
Oh, yeah. That's something. As we finish analyzing this stuff... It is so more concrete that we would never watch certain episodes again.
Yes.
And that's such a releasing feeling in a lot of ways.
I think the audience has to have a satisfying experience of the season. I think they have to feel it's come full circle and that they've had an arc.
So, Rachel, what is the next episode of Star Trek Discovery we will be watching? I imagine it wouldn't be Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2 because this one's just called Such Sweet Sorrow, not Such Sweet Sorrow Part 1. As you would do when you split episodes up, even in Star Trek Discovery. I wouldn't imagine it would be that. It must be a different name. Completely different.
No, it's Such Sweet Sorrow Part 2.
Why wasn't this one called Part 1?
Who knows? So, it is the season finale of season 2, which is episode 14, and it comes in an 8.2.
One of the highest rated episodes, if not the highest.
The USS Discovery battles against control in a fight not only for their lives, but for the future, with a little help from unexpected friends. Spock and Burnham discern vital new connections between the red signals, while Burnham faces one of life's harshest truths.
That's
right
it.
Decisions,
oh my God,
are often the hardest to make.
Was that a new sentence?
No, that was a semicolon.
Did they need... What a weird description that was. It's like, here's all the plots and here's the meaning.
Yeah, Spock and Burnham discern vital new connections between the red signals, and while Burnham faces one of life's harshest truths, colon... The right decisions are often the hardest to make.
Okay. So, we'll be approaching the yum yum next episode. We'll have to, of course, dedicate the whole episode to that, and we won't be able to discuss the torpedo, Cornwell's death at all. We won't be able to discuss the fact that Pike isn't blinded by a photon torpedo exploding
no
in his fucking face.
No time for that.
We won't have time for AI sausage. We won't have time for control or them leaping into the future or Spock having to reach out to others. The whole episode, I guess, we'll have to dedicate to the yum yum moment for an hour. And then say, you know what? The episode was pretty bad. So that will be that. You can find us on these social medias. Rachel, what social medias are we on?
Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And Reddit.
Oh, yes. How could I ever forget Reddit?
What a fun place.
Yes.
We're on that. You can find us through Yum Yum Pod or Yum Yum Podcast. We have an email where you can email us your questions, queries, thoughts, and concerns at yumyumpod@gmail.com. And of course, we have our Patreon. Rachel, what do we do on Patreon?
we give you extra things to listen to. And we are discussing things that are either Star Trek related or not Star Trek related, because that is the dichotomy that the Yum Yum Pod lives in.
Yeah, we talk about the movies once a month. We talk about the top and bottom worst rated episodes of other shows. And we give our thoughts on other TV shows in general, and maybe one or two extra little things here along the way. So go to our description and find all of that information there. Rachel, the only way to end this episode, the only appropriate way to end this episode is... Hi, Rachel!
Hi, Ryan!
How are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm feeling very well. We're ending the episode now!